Hi, and welcome to the Lakeshore Update. I'm Dee Dotson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest on a data breach at Methodist Hospitals that could have exposed personal information of more than 68,000 patients. The Gary City Council and Spectacle Entertainment LLC have finalized a local development agreement that dictates the city to receive 3% of the adjusted gross receipts. Jenny Lindsay reports on the 2020 FAFSA application, and Chris Nolte has a conversation with Mitch Barloga about the Greenways Foundation of Indiana. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. Mayor Thomas McDermott Jr. is not denying he's interested in, quote, moving up the ladder politically, which could include a primary election challenge next year to U.S. Representative Pete Visclosky. For now, however, McDermott said Wednesday he solely is focused on winning a fifth term as mayor of Lake County's most populous city, Hammond, and ensuring that his slate of Democratic City Council candidates City Council candidates likewise prevail in their upcoming elections. The mayor suggested Tuesday he's being politically targeted by Visclosky after the congressman's campaign requested reams of documents under Indiana's open records law that detail seemingly all of McDermott's actions as mayor over the past 15 years. McDermott said he was, quote, shocked by the extensive records request, and he doesn't know why Visclosky perceives him as a potential political threat. Visclosky characterized his seeking information about McDermott's tenure in office as, quote, normal, and said he appreciated the mayor's prompt and thorough attention to his campaign's request.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The Gary Common Council and Spectacle Entertainment have finalized a local development agreement that dictates the city's financial take from casino gaming operations and economic development benefits. Spectacle officials hope to open a land-based $300 million Hard Rock Casino off Burr Street south of I-80-94 by the end of 2020. The City Council unanimously ratified the PAC during Tuesday's meeting with little discussion. The PAC calls for the city to receive 3% of the casino's adjusted gross receipts not to fall below a minimum of $6.15 million annually. The city will also receive 3% of the proceeds from sports betting done via a mobile betting site. Because of Gary's financial crisis, Spectacle agreed to provide $5 million in advance money. The timing of the payment is based on the company's agreement with its lenders. In exchange, Spectacle will receive a monthly credit of not less than $83,333 from the city. Spectacle Vice President and General Counsel John Keeler said Wednesday, Spectacle should have its financing wrapped up in the next 2 or 3 weeks. The Indiana Gaming Commission will have to approve the financing and the contract with a mobile sports betting firm. Keeler goes on to say he's still reluctant to offer a groundbreaking date. He hoped by mid-November, grading at the 30-acre site along 29th Avenue would begin. In August, Spectacle CEO Rod Ratcliffe said it planned a speedy timeline after the Illinois legislature approved 5 casinos for Chicago.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
A Northwest Indiana hospital system is warning more than 68,000 patients that their personal information, including social security numbers and health records, may have been exposed during a data breach. Methodist Hospitals has been mailing letters to patients detailing the steps they can take to safeguard themselves against possible fraud. The Times reported Wednesday, Methodist, which has campuses in Gary and Maryville, said it was alerted in June to questionable activity on a staffer's email account and that it learned in August that two employees had fallen victim to an email phishing scam in which an authorized user got access to their accounts. The hospital system has no proof that patient information was accessed, but officials said they couldn't rule it out. In addition to Social Security numbers and patient health records, the hackers may have accessed names, addresses, dates of birth, driver's license, state ID, passport numbers, and credit card information. The hospital system is advising people who may have been affected by the data breach to monitor their credit report and medical billing data for any suspicious activity. The hospital system is advising people who may have been affected by the data breach to monitor their credit reports and medical billing data for any suspicious activity.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
A hotel entrepreneur is donating $16 million to Catholic schools across Northwest Indiana. The gift from White Lodging founder Bruce White and his wife Beth aims to boost access to technology, curriculum support, and financial aid through a new community partner. The Times reports that the Big Shoulders Fund in Chicago will provide support to help make those efforts possible in Northern Lake County's Catholic schools, aiming to first serve families in Gary, Hammond, and East Chicago. The Bruce and Beth White Family Foundation's gift is expected to bring operational and academic support directly to 10 elementary and high schools in the Diocese of Gary, benefiting about 3,300 students.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
State lawmakers have pointed to school referendum measures as one way to raise teachers' pay, but critics say not every district can pass one. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jenny Lindsay reports a new state analysis reveals just how much teacher pay has increased in districts with voter-approved funding.
An analysis shared with lawmakers this week shows schools that pass referendum measures focused on general school operations pay their teachers more on average. But fiscal analyst Austin Spears says when districts promote referendum measures focused on teachers, it can make a big difference for how much a district raises their pay.
When we looked specifically at just that small subset, the effect was substantially larger, which is generally what you would expect.
Average pay in school corporations with approved teacher-focused referenda rose 3.7% over 2 years. Schools without school funding referenda raised average teacher pay by less than 2%. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jeannie Lindsay.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Starting this year, Indiana high schools and the state's Commission for Higher Education will keep better track of who files the FAFSA, or Free Application for Federal Student Aid. Applications for the 2020 school year opened this month, and Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jenny Lindsay tells us why officials say more families should file.
The commission's director of school and community outreach, Barbie Martin, says some students don't use FAFSA because they don't think they'll qualify for funding. But she says that's a critical misconception, and the application is used for students to tap into financial aid from the feds and the state.
We are first in the Midwest and fourth in the United States in the amount of aid that students can receive. And the first step to receiving any of that aid is filing the FAFSA.
This year's application is based on tax and income information from 2018. The state's deadline for filing is April 15th, but Martin says students should pay attention to deadlines for colleges and universities and file sooner rather than later. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jeannie Lindsay.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana Attorney General Curtis Hill will appeal a recent ruling ordering the release of the man who was convicted of killing Bloomington resident Jill Bierman. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Emma Atkinson reports.
In 2006, a Morgan County grand jury found John Myers guilty in the May 2000 disappearance and murder of Bierman, who was an Indiana University student at the time. Earlier this month, U.S. District Court Judge James Sweeney ruled that Myers had received ineffective counsel during his trial, noting, among other things, that Myers' attorney made false statements to the jury. Hill's office announced Friday that it would appeal Myers' release. Myers is being held in Michigan City at the Indiana State Prison. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Emma Atkinson.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
A legislative study committee decided Wednesday not to recommend the General Assembly legalize cameras to catch speeding motorists in highway construction zones. But Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brenda Smith reports that doesn't mean it won't happen in the 2020 session.
Lawmakers tried and failed a few years ago to allow cameras in highway construction zones that would catch drivers exceeding the speed limit. There seemed to be momentum building this summer for a study committee recommendation to pass such a bill, but the panel opted against it. Still, Representative Ed Soliday says there's a better chance than ever speed cameras will become legal.
The number of rear-end collisions we've had with fatalities is starting to trouble a lot of folks.
Study committee chair Senator Mike Kreider says despite no recommendation, he expects proposed legislation next session to legalize the cameras as part of a broader conversation.
We're going to have a lot of talk about distracted driving in general.
The 2020 session begins in January. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's regionally speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with Mitch Barloga.
The Greenways Foundation of Indiana is working with the Indiana Parks and Recreation Association to come up with a series of workshops on what are called trail towns. Well, what's a trail town, and why should you be interested here in Northwest Indiana? Well, we have the board president of the Greenways Foundation with us. He just happens to be Mitch Barloga, who is with NERPC. And Mitch, thank you for joining us on the show today.
Thank you, Chris.
Tell us first a little bit about the Greenways Foundation, because it's a statewide organization, has board members represent, I think, almost every facet of every corner of the state, don't they?
Exactly. We do have board members situated throughout the state of Indiana, and we are a nonprofit 501c3 corporation that is looking to raise funds to help communities as well as advocates to expand our trail network throughout all of Indiana.
Mm-hmm. We are very familiar with the trails, and you can't hardly go anywhere in many sections of the state, including Northwest Indiana, without encountering a trail, either having to slow down for crossing or maybe going alongside. There are trails that do pick up alongside city streets here in Northwest Indiana, so they're always out there. But in turn, how do they get involved with this, the community at large? You're talking about trail towns.
Right.
What's the concept that the association is looking at, foundation's looking at?
Right? Correct. Yeah. Trail towns is a concept that started out with the Great Allegheny Passage, which is in the Pennsylvania-Maryland area. Mm-hmm. It's an extremely long trail, and there were many communities that were located around it. And so the idea was, how do we make these communities more attractive for people on the trail to come and visit and to try to reap some economic benefits of the people using it? So trail towns grew out of that, and now it is kind of emerging through the East and coming this way. We have programs throughout Pennsylvania, Kentucky, and even into Michigan. Now, the Greenways Foundation, what we're trying to work with is a consultant out of Pennsylvania. Her name is Amy Camp, and she has been able to do this throughout the country and get communities and regions excited about the concept of trail towns. And so we're taking a big splash. We have organized 6 workshops throughout the state this year, and it's going to happen from Halloween all the way through the following week on November 8th. And our first workshop will happen here in Portage on Halloween night, mm-hmm. or Halloween morning, that is. So the idea is to share with stakeholders in Northwest Indiana, and stakeholders is a very broad term, and in this case, you're talking about public entities, people who own businesses that may be around trails, and also just advocates in general and even users of the trail, to figure out how to best position communities to be attractive for people, for trail users. And a lot of people who use trails, again, the Great Allegheny Passage is kind of a tourist destination, mm-hmm. where it's nearly, 80 to 100 miles in length. So people are not going to take, a day trip. They're going to be out there for multiple days. So you have to accommodate these trail users with overnight accommodations, restaurants, and other places where they can enjoy and relax. And we just want to make sure that those tools are available to our communities too. We have over 160 miles of trail throughout Northwest Indiana. So conceivably, people can come here in this region and stay a night or two. And not even those who are visiting, just people that live here. If you live in Hammond, you might want to visit Chesterton. You could connect all the way through to Chesterton on trail today. And that's a pretty long ride. You're talking about 20, 30, even a 40-mile ride. And so people might want to stay the night in Chesterton, enjoy some of the restaurants out there. So we have to make sure that businesses can be bike friendly, and there are a lot of strategies for that, for accommodating bicycles and bicycle users. Restaurants are also in the mix of that as well. Discounts can be afforded. And so those are strategies we're looking forward to learning about during these workshops.
Was there anything you mentioned about the Allegheny Trail in particular in Pennsylvania? Was there anything in doing the research, learning about that trail and then all of the opportunities that they made available for economic development along the trail, the places to stay for the overnights or places to eat or the like, other tourism that's probably located very close by, I would imagine, to the trail? Were those ideas that they have put forth that you were able to want to put into this particular this series of trail towns, as you call it?
Yeah, and I'm not going to look at that because I'm not nearly as familiar with the Great Allegheny Passage. What I am familiar with is what's called the High Trestle Trail in mm-hmm. central Iowa near Des Moines. And I had an opportunity firsthand to take a look at what's going on out there. And the High Trestle Trail runs maybe 20 or 30 miles, but it's kind of in an isolated area of Iowa, but it gets a tremendous amount of tourist interest because they have this tremendous bridge that goes over basically a gorge with the Des Moines River. But there are nearby towns that have taken advantage of this interest, and they have accommodated people that use the trail. And I actually had the opportunity to visit a hotel, an old hotel that was restored, and it accommodates bicycles. It helps store bicycles. It provides services for people who are on bicycles, with repairs and with other types of accommodations. And so learning from that really opened my eyes to the potential of what we could take advantage of here in the region and really not only make our trails even more attractive to people living here, but also people that might want to visit.
So it's a jump in history, it's probably an extension of what was established when the Model T was out there on the very early highways, like the National Road and other highways as well, too, where you had stops along the way and you had places that would repair vehicles if there people were making the trek.
And that's exactly the case. You make an excellent point about a historical reference here. The Lincoln Highway in Dyer used to be the ideal section. It was mm-hmm. the first paved segment of highway in the United States. And there was a lot of hotels and restaurants that were built specifically to accommodate the motorists. Now you have that today, but it's not, it's not nearly as friendly as it may once have been. And again, with trails, it is more of a personal issue. People are seeing people face to face here, and there's a lot of interaction. People that work with each other on the trail themselves, and they are able to pass the information on to potential visitors to this region.
Now, is Amy Camp going to come over to each of the workshops, starting with the one on Halloween morning in Portage, and make all the other treks? Because we're talking basically Portage and South Bend, Fort Wayne, Evansville, Terre Haute, Carmel. She's covering the entire state.
She certainly is. And yes, she understands what's involved here. And there are some interesting travels that she's going to have to take care of. I think she's going from South Bend to Evansville in one day. And hopefully she's not going to put me off of her Christmas card list for that one. But even so, she is very eager to make this work, because what we want to do at the Greenways Foundation is use this as kind of a starting block for us to create a Trails Town program for Indiana, where we can work with communities on making sure that they are Trail Town certified, where we have certifications for different things like Tree City USA and Bicycle Friendly Community. Well, we want to start a Trail Town program. There's only one in the country that we know of that's on a statewide basis, and that's in Kentucky. That is being run by their tourism office. So we're looking to have that same type of energy afforded here in Indiana.
Now, if that does come about, if you do have the Trail Town series that's set up, who might be, I mean, it's probably one of the things you'll have to work out after the consulting and talking to people in every corner of the state as to who's going to be running this thing if you do establish it.
Well, that's the idea. We want to get a groundswell of interest and energy behind it. And so it'll make it a lot easier for that agency to kind of take the reins of it. I mean, the Greenways Foundation could do it, but we are an all-volunteer organization. We do not have paid staff. However, tourism does, and they would be a logical outlet because, again, it is an economic development tool for these communities that embrace these.
So it could get turned over and maybe put together with the Indiana tourism efforts, I guess, if it works out that way?
Well, certainly. And you have to remember, too, you know, Chris, the entire state is under this kind of trail revolution where we have Governor Holcomb giving $90 million for new trail development in the state. We've had the recent conclusion of the Bicycle Trails Task Force that has called for 500 miles of interconnected trails throughout all of the state of Indiana. And that is moving forward quite well. And so this all is coming together at the right time.
Now, you mentioned the series of workshops that are going to happen with the one in Portage being the very first one. Give us a little more detail about what this event coming up on the 31st is going to be, and if anybody is interested in attending this workshop on the morning of Halloween, how they can do that.
Certainly. These workshops, as you had mentioned before, there are six around the state. The first one is on Halloween morning here at NRPC, and NRPC is located in Portage at 6100 South Port Road. The easiest way I tell people, if you know where Bass Pro Shops is, then you'll know where we are. The event takes place from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. There is a working lunch involved. The cost is $25, but it's $20 if you're a member of the Indiana Parks and Recreation Association or the Greenways Foundation. For those who might not know if they are part of the Greenways Foundation, we do have a license plate program. And if you have a license plate, you're a member of the Greenways Foundation.
Ah.
And so you can come in for that discounted rate. But yeah, we're really looking forward to it. We're getting a lot of interest already, and we're looking forward to seeing where it goes.
Now, we know that the series of workshops begins, we said, on October 31st, runs through November 8th. Once the series of workshops is complete, what seems to be the next step that the Greenways Foundation is going to take to move this all along in the hopes of creating the series of trail towns?
Certainly. And when we have the conclusion to the workshops, we'll be working with Amy, the consultant, and having a strong evaluation process about how this went down and what was the feedback, and probably do some surveys with those who attended and kind of get their feedback and find out where it goes next. We're looking to get moving on this rapidly while the iron is hot, and to hopefully take the recommendations and the interest to statewide agencies, primarily tourism, and to kind of gauge their interest to see how it works out from here. Now, if tourism might not be able to handle it at this point, I think the Greenways Foundation would probably start the movement, and to do so maybe as early as next spring.
So you have to lobby with the lawmakers to be able to get the funding to be able to help to get the program going, I suppose?
I don't even know if legislators are involved here. I mean, it makes such a strong case for tourism interest that we believe we can work with them outside of any kind of legislative work. Legislation is a whole different animal when it comes to this, but I believe that tourism, as it has been done in Kentucky and other places, they should be able to embrace this going forward.
One of the questions I did want to ask that came to mind as we were talking here about the opportunities that are available for trails all across the state. Do we find some portions of the state have more trails, like Northwest Indiana, and some have fewer? So does that make it more difficult to create the trail towns?
Well, yes and no. Again, the trail towns are interesting because what they're doing is we're kind of shaking the tree, and we're bringing a lot of advocates out of the woodwork here, and we're finding that out, especially in Southwest Indiana. If you take a look at the visionary map that was prepared by the Indiana Department of Natural Resources that shows all these connections throughout the state, there's kind of a big gap in Southwest Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
However, there's a lot of interest. I mean, I just had a workshop in Jasper, which is near the French Lick vicinity, and they're all happy about trails, but we don't see any visionary corridors there. So with this program, hopefully what will come about is a better understanding from state officials at the DNR that these communities want to see trails connect, and we're going to see them on proposed maps and, again, with the Trail Town program going forward.
Well, it sounds like the Trail Towns program is liable to spur the development of even more trails. And like you say, especially in these areas of the state that don't have very many trails, if any at all, really to speak of.
So. Well, certainly. And, you know, we have a lot of different communities that are on trails, you know, especially in the northern part of the state. The Panhandle Trail is one. It goes from Winnemac to the Logansport vicinity. It's a 20-mile route. It goes through several farm cities. I never heard of Star City before.
Uh-huh.
So there is a Star City in Indiana. It's a very local community, maybe a few hundred people, but again, they're set up very well for this program and they could take great advantage of it.
Well, it sounds like that the Trail Towns concept is going to have a great opportunity in Indiana, mm-hmm. and it's wise to take advantage of it, but the way to do it is to learn more about it, and that's what all these workshops, starting with the one on Thursday, October 31st, is going to be all about in Portage at the NERPC offices. And Mitch Marloga, he's in his capacity here, although he works for NERPC,
yes.
and deals in trails and things of the nature. But he, in this capacity, is the president of the board of directors of the Greenways Foundation of Indiana. And Mitch, thank you for coming by to talk about this.
And one last thing to interject, greenwaysfoundation.org is where they can register for the workshop.
That's good. Thank you for coming by and telling us about it. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris.
You're listening to Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Radio.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.